Every good morning to everybody, and at the outset, my personal thanks to both Dr. Omar Khan and Dr. Richard Derman for having me on this panel again this year. At the outset, I bring greetings to you all from my institution back home in Belgaum in Southwest India, from the JNU University JN Medical College. We are actually in the 52nd year, and the trust itself, KLE, which administers the medical college, is in its centenary year. So I bring greetings to you all from my institution. Of course, I have no relations to disclose. Now, the sort of the background on which the global network and much of the work that we do is based on this particular factor, that we have a large number of maternal and newborn deaths, especially in resource-limited countries around the world. Perhaps there are interventions that we know can save many of these lives. So the question that we have been really trying to address is, how can we take these interventions out into the community and make a difference to the mortality numbers around the developing world? Just to reinforce, the global network, as was mentioned by Dr. Derman, came into existence in 2001 as a partnership between NICHD and the Gates Foundation. And it was not just about doing a few research protocols, but rather develop research capacity in all of the global network sites to focus on issues related to maternal and newborn survival. So when the global network was formed in 2001, the 10 sites in the network had individual protocols, and there was a fair bit of diversity. So if you look at the protocols that were brought forward, you know, the site in Guatemala was looking at complementary feeding to improve maternal and newborn outcomes. We had sites in South America looking at prevention of cleft palate, antioxidants for eclampsia, preeclampsia. The Argentinian group looked at improving obstetric practices in hospitals, you know, promoting evidence-based guidelines. The two sites in Africa looked at treatment of malaria and newborn resuscitation. The site in Tibet looked at a traditional medicine for prevention of postpartum hemorrhage, and our site looked at misoprostol for prevention of postpartum hemorrhage. So we published that study in 2006. We showed a 50% reduction in PPH on administration of oral misoprostol, and our colleague Dr. Stacy Geller will talk more about some of the subsequent studies that we have been involved in. So essentially, the focus has been on identifying what are the evidence-based interventions that can help in preventing postpartum hemorrhage. And we are right now working with WHO on a heat-stable formulation of carbetocin for prevention of postpartum hemorrhage. So that's some of the work that has happened in the first cycle of the network. But as we moved to the second cycle of funding, somewhere in 2007-2008, the network strategically decided on doing common protocols across the network rather than individual site studies. And the first such effort was taking the AAP NRP program down into the communities to train birth attendants, including traditional birth attendants, for newborn resuscitation. And as part of that whole effort, what we had to do was to develop a maternal newborn health registry, of which I'll talk a little bit about the data and the type of information that has been available through the registry effort. Subsequently, we did a cluster RCT of emergency maternal and newborn care intervention. Again, I'll talk a little bit about the antenatal corticosteroid trial for improving survival among low birth weight preterm babies. And of course, the Helping Babies Breathe initiative is actually an offshoot of the work that started with the first breath. So the MNH registry, that was actually an offshoot of the need to have a community-based, population-based pregnancy tracking system as part of the first breath effort. And it got more formalized in 2008. So in the last 7 years, we have more than 500,000 pregnancies in our database across the 7 sites which are in the network. And we look at some of the key indicators of maternal and newborn health, mortality, and recently we have also added maternal near miss. And what the registry does permit us is to look at outcomes over time in the participating sites. And I'll present some of the data from the 2 Indian sites because of certain unique initiatives of the ministry and whether those initiatives are making an impact on the mortality numbers. So we are down in southwest of India, in Belgaum, in Karnataka, whereas the other Indian site is in Nagpur, which is the center of the country. So between the 2, over the 4-year period, for which I'm presenting the data here, we have over 100,000 pregnancies with an extremely high follow-up rate for outcomes. And this is made possible because of an annual household survey that we do, which establishes the expected pregnancy rates, and we compare the actual enrollment versus the target and make sure that the registry is as complete as one could hope for. So one of the questions that we have been looking at is, is the ministry initiative of promoting facility births and skilled birth attendants making an impact on mortality? So if you look at the data from 2010 to 2013, you find that by 2013, almost every single delivery is occurring in a facility by a skilled birth attendant. Over the same period, there's a small decline in perinatal mortality. So although we have been able to shift the births to the facilities, and this is largely driven by a cash incentive program that the Ministry of Health is offering, for women delivering at facilities. So it is making a significant change in terms of, where women are delivering, but there's no commensurate reduction in mortality, both in terms of perinatal, and we have similar data for maternal mortality as well. So the question is, have we just shifted the venue of death, and why we're not getting a reduction in mortality as much as we hope for? And if you look at the breakup of what is contributing to the reduction, whatever little reduction is there, we find that it's more to do with reduction in stillbirth rather than a reduction in neonatal mortality. And that's partly because of the increase in C-section rates. So because women are delivering at facilities, there is increased access to C-section, and therefore some of the stillbirths are being reduced. But in order for us to reduce neonatal mortality, I think there's something more that needs to be done beyond just having the women to deliver at a facility. So that's really an issue of quality of care at these facilities and, better support systems to take care of the, more sick babies which may be delivered. And of course, a whole series of publications from the registry data were published as a supplement in Reproductive Health in June earlier this year. So those who are interested can look up. It's an open access journal. So there's a lot of valuable information available from the Global Network sites coming out of the registry, which is looking at all kinds of risk factors, etc. Another trial that we have been involved in is basically to address again this issue. Antenatal corticosteroids have been around for decades. They are being used almost on a routine basis in many other advanced countries in facilities. So the question that we were trying to look at is why there is not much uptake of this fairly well-established intervention in the resource-poor settings, in the low-income countries, and even in facilities. So we did a trial which basically focused on, number one, improving the use of antenatal corticosteroids, and number two, as a consequence of that, would there be a reduction in neonatal mortality? So that was the research question that this trial addressed, which was conducted between 2011 to 2014, again a cluster randomized trial, which is what most of the network studies are. We rarely do individually randomized trials. Most of our studies are cluster randomized trials utilizing the registry platform. So what we found is that the intervention per se, in terms of improving the coverage of ACS, did work. So over 18 months, we were able to increase it to around 45% from a baseline of almost less than 10%. So to that extent, the intervention worked. The community engagement, the training of the health providers, so that did work. The question was, did it really translate into reduction in mortality? And this is where we had some surprising results. I don't know how many of you have read the publication which came out in the Lancet last year. In the smaller babies, there apparently was really not much of a benefit. Whereas in all babies, including the larger babies, there clearly was an harm. So we started wondering as to what's happening here. This is not what we had expected or what we had hoped for. So the only signals that we have in the data, which probably can explain as to why we got this kind of a, you know, sort of unexpected results, is there is some evidence of increased in maternal sepsis as well as newborn sepsis, which probably explains why there was harm in the larger babies. So therefore, I think the criteria that we used to target the intervention probably did not work out. So we need better indicators, better tools to identify the women who could get benefit out of the administration of antenatal corticosteroids. So that's sort of the conclusion from the study. And more will happen in the next few years because WHO and Gates are really interested in promoting this intervention, but on the right target population. So the last study that I'll briefly talk about is related to another major problem in many of the developing countries, which is related to the maternal nutritional status. Again, data from the registry shows that, you know, a large proportion of our women are having short stature, low BMI, and anemia is almost universal. If you look at the numbers, more than 96% have less than 12 grams. So almost every woman is anemic. We also looked at the food insecurity status. So we did a sample of women prior to conception. So this is before even they conceive. These are married women. So again, we find that almost 15% of the women have some sort of food insecurity. And this can change dramatically if the monsoon fails. And we have a really bad monsoon this year. So if we were to repeat this year, I am absolutely confident this number will again increase. We also looked at what the women are consuming. Because it's a predominantly vegetarian population, we have a significant low consumption of not only energy per se, but of protein and a number of major micronutrients, iron, zinc, calcium, vitamin C, vitamin A, dietary fiber. So not only are these women compromised nutritionally, they are also having a nutritional deficiency, and this is the situation before they conceive. So this is not something that they are carrying, I mean, they are not developing during pregnancy, but rather carrying into that pregnancy. So we thought, why not try an intervention that focuses in the preconception period? So right now we are, because the current interventions are targeting, you know, supplementation during the second trimester of pregnancy, whether it's iron or folate. So right now we are doing, just about completing enrollment to a three-arm study of trying to supplement the women, number one, in the preconception period with a nutrition supplement, a vegetarian product based made out of soy milk and peanuts, compared to introducing the same supplement in the second trimester, and the third arm is a control arm. So we're not really testing whether supplementation should work in this deficient population. So the question is, what's the right time to supplement? So that's really what the study is trying to answer. Hopefully by next year, APHA in Denver, we should have the results of this trial. And the study actually is in collaboration with the University of Colorado, Denver, funded by Gates. So right now we are in the third cycle of funding. Started in 2013, but right now we are working almost frantically to get the low-dose aspirin supplementation protocol out into the field, and hopefully by early new year, we should have at least some of the sites, if not all the sites, actually enrolling to the participants, and Dr. Derman will talk more about this particular protocol in the subsequent presentation. So it's been a great journey of 15 years. We had a major celebration in DC in June where we were able to showcase some of the work that we have been able to do and some of the public health impact that these studies have had, both in terms of reducing maternal and newborn mortality. So I must thank all of the donors, funding agencies, which have supported our work over the 15-year period, and we are really proud to be working in this area. And on that note, I conclude my presentation. So thanks once again, Omar and Donald.